Chag Sameach, everyone. It is such a gift to be here together. Today I want to share with you just a little bit, because this Passover for me sparked a new train of thought, something I'd never considered before, certainly not in this way. And as I pondered this question, this idea, it opened up some new potential for meaning. So I want to start with just an origin story. So I'm flying back to Colorado, and thinking about our Passover Seder this year, we had 8 kids under 8, which is the perfect number of small humans to have thoughtful, in-depth conversations about what's happening in the world. And I knew heading in that everyone, all the kids especially, had been really thinking about what's happening in Israel, what's happening worldwide. And I knew that they wanted to have thoughtful, insightful discussions, that they had prepared not just the 4 questions. And I was just feeling like, what have I gotten myself into? I could have stayed in Boston, could have had these conversations. What are we going to do? And so I came up with a couple of strategies. One of my strategies for working with the kids is always stories. And so I started writing like a story of the Exodus that I thought would be meaningful. And part of that for me, especially when talking to kids, is to get into the feelings. Like, how did you feel? How did the people feel? And we wanted to act out, like, how do you feel when you're so tired? And like, get into the body. So we had this whole conversation about just how tired the Israelites were. We got our bodies and we got just like really tired. Like your muscles hurt and your bones ache and you're just so tired, and it's been 400 years and you haven't had any hope. And then we got tired in our breathing. Just imagine how tired you are that you can't even really take a full breath. And in that world of exhaustion, we started to think about what it must have been like for the Israelites to have this person show up and say, "It's time! Hey, everybody, I know it's been tough, but freedom awaits!" And there's this moment for the Israelites that they're just like, how do you even experience that? Rashi says in the text that they were kotzer ruach, that they were, like, the idea was so different than what they could even process, that they started either not being able to breathe fully or hyperventilating. They were just, they couldn't get it. They couldn't get that picture. That's vignette number one. Vignette number two is, as I was preparing for the Seder that we were not going to do, I was just thinking about how this Passover is the closest experience of Passover I've ever had to my ancestors. I always grew up, and my parents have this Seder that's a very, I would call it a crunchy granola Seder. You sit down and you are just invited to think about your own personal mitzrayim and what are the patterns and the behaviors that hold you back. And throughout the Seder, there are all these processes, including a fire ceremony, and you come out at the end and you're just like liberated. You've given up all these behaviors that have kept you from being your full self, and you are redeemed. And this year I was like, you can't do that. And not only can you do that, but I can't even, like, the way that the world is right now, I can't even really contemplate redemption. And that feels hard. Like, I feel like the Israelites, how do you even contemplate a world where it just seems impossible that we could ever cross into the promise? Like, what does that even mean now? Vignette number two. Vignette number three. Getting ready for the Seder, which who knows what you're going to do with 8 kids under 8. I say to my dad, "Hey, I think I want to teach a new song." And my dad says to me, "A new song? How are you going to get 30 people, including 8 kids under 8, to sing a song?" Which was the ultimate question that prompted this reflection. How can you get 30 people to, if I can't get 30 people to sing a song at a Seder, how did Moses and Miriam get 3 million people to sing a song coming out of Egypt? And by the way, it's not a simple song. It's a very detailed, very precise song. So then I got back into thinking about, what does it feel like to be an Israelite? You're exhausted. You're walking out of Egypt. You get to the sea. You're following a pillar of cloud, a pillar of fire. You've been walking nonstop. Yomam v'layla. You're just going and going and going. And by the way, you didn't start out feeling great. You are exhausted. You're schlepping your kids and your bags, not very many bags, but enough bags to be heavy. And you are walking and you're walking and you're walking and you walk through. And thank God this miracle opens up and the sea parts and you walk through. And then you see your enemies destroyed. But then, how do you feel? Like, how do you feel? You're so tired. You're so exhausted. You have no idea where you're going. You're putting all your faith in this guy who says he can talk to God. You've seen some wonders, but how do you feel? And what do? And this is what's just so interesting. If you look at the text, and I never do this, but today I just want to look very, very closely at the text. Please feel free to look with me. We're on page 405, verse 31. When Israel, it's at the very bottom of 405, when Israel saw the wondrous power which the Lord has wielded against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord. They had faith in the Lord and his servant Moses. Then, we're on the next page, then Moses and the Israelites sang this song to the Lord. It blew my mind. It blows my mind every time I read this. That their reaction after being exhausted, after being overwhelmed with this destruction, and they have no idea where they're headed to, where they're going, what's going to be. They've left everything they know, and their move is awe, their move is faith, and their move is song. So if you can get through the, like, how do you even get to song? I don't know. I imagine myself back then. Would I sing? I honestly don't know. I honestly had the question this year of if it was the right time to sing. But if you were going to sing, and if we were going to sing, you saw the song. It's a long song. So my question, the question I want to spend the rest of our time with today, how do you get 3 million people to sing a song? So there are a couple of possibilities. I've been thinking about this for a long time, but here's what I've got for you today. One possibility is that this was an old song. The way that gospels functioned in this country for slaves on plantations, this was a song that had been sung for generations upon generations. It was a song that was known. Now, there's a clear problem with that thinking. Because in order to sing this song, you have to know the future. So maybe let's go with this. Just going to work it here. If this was a song that had been sung, maybe, just maybe, this is a teaching about the power of affirmation, that you have the power in your own mind. This is the liberal crunchy granola in me. That if you really think and you really focus on a clear possibility, that the power of your mind can create reality in the world. Kind of stretches credulity, but maybe you could have imagined that God would have swooped in and saved you and rescued you and brought you out through the sea and then crashed the sea down on your enemies, and you would have made it through and you would have had this song to sing, and you sang it enough times that it happened. It doesn't really work, but I still think that teaching is powerful, and there's still something to that idea of affirmation, that even in the darkest times, we can imagine the world that we want it to be and we can get there. Okay, but I'm with you. That's not so compelling. Rabbi David Frankel has a whole teaching about the Song of the Sea. It's really great. And he talks about the problem with the song. I.e., if you look closely at this song, let's look at page 411, verse 13. If you look closely at this song, it talks about events that happen long after the Exodus. In your love, you lead the people you redeemed. In your strength, you guide them to your holy abode. The peoples here, they tremble. Agony grips the dwellers in Philistia. Now are the clans of Edom dismayed. The tribes of Moab, trembling grips them. All the dwellers in Canaan are aghast. Terror and dread descend upon them.
Through the might of your arm, they are still as stone. Till your people cross over, O Lord, till your people cross whom you have ransomed, you will bring them and plant them in your own mountain, the place you made to dwell in, O Lord, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands established. Now, how is it possible? I get how they could sing about just witnessing the destructions of the Egyptians. That makes sense. But how do they know about the wars that are ahead of them? And the Torah goes out of its way to say that God led them the roundabout way so they wouldn't get any fights on the way. How do they know? And how do they know about the temple? And how do they know about the Torah? And there's so many questions. And so Rabbi Frankel says, possibly, this song was actually written long after the Exodus. He writes, it is thus most reasonable to assume that the song was originally recited in one of the central temples in the land. Most scholars assume that the reference is to Jerusalem and only later attributed to Moses and the Israelites, and situated at the time of the miracle at the sea. By placing the song at this juncture and putting it in the mouths of Moses and the Israelites, the editor depicts the miracle at the sea as such a high point that the people burst spontaneously into song. So if you think it's written far after and then imposed back on this story, that has the advantage of heightening the drama, heightening the story, and giving our people the ability to recognize God's miracle and be faithful in exactly that moment. But I think this understanding actually has something else to teach us. Because this is talking about one practice that we can do to digest and process trauma. That when we have experienced trauma, there are all sorts of therapies, talk therapies and light therapies that invite you to go back to the moment and rethink what happened and speak about what happened and re-examine what happened. And so this teaching, if we think about the song as coming back, is a lesson for us that even if we can't metabolize what we're experiencing now, we have the ability to go back in time, sometime in the future, and create meaning. We can actually recreate our reactions. We can actually recreate our actions. And in that way, we have the ability to transform our future. By the way, this song, if we think about it this way, wasn't just written about something that happened back then, but it's something we say each and every day as a reminder that we write our story in every moment and we choose a story of liberation. And still, it kind of messes with the drama of the Torah. The Torah is very clear, it happens then, right? So how do we process it? Either it's a song that they processed for a long time, a power of affirmation. It's a song that they wrote in the future and it's coming back to process trauma. Or the simplest and probably most real idea, which is Rashi's explanation, which is that 3 million people could sing this song because Moses and Miriam sang it line by line. They would sing Az Yashir, and then the people would sing Micha Mocha, the people would sing back. Now, there's a little technical problem. Moses probably didn't have a microphone loud enough for 3 million people, but if God can open the sea, I feel like God can create some kind of microphone situation. Now, what does this teach us? If that's true, that Moses led the people out and Miriam led the people out and they sang line by line, then this song is all about the importance of holy and righteous leadership. Then this song is about the power that we have to join together in the most disparate of moments, in the most challenging of moments, if we have the right leaders, if we have the right leaders that can give voice to our feelings, if we have the leaders that can walk forwards in confidence and in faith, then 3 million people can all be on the same page and 3 million people can walk towards the promised land. So I don't think this song is A or B or C, right? This is a timeless song. The Song of the Sea teaches us that in our most desperate situations, we're not stuck. We can think forward and create possibility. We can go back and rewrite our narrative, and we can look around and find the people that can help us walk through. We rise, Chatzi Kaddish.